From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
It's all about marketing. As a matter of fact, this is the 25th year that the Detroit show has been designated as the North American International Auto Show. And basically, you know, 25 years ago, a group of guys got together. When I say guys, basically, you know, the dealer groups, because that's who sponsors all auto shows, the one in Austin, the one in Amarillo, wherever you have an auto show, 9 times out of 10, it's the dealer group that's sponsoring the show. But anyway, as I say, you know, 25 years ago, basically they got together and somebody came up with the idea of renaming the Detroit Auto Show the North American International Auto Show, number one. Then number two, what they did was they went around and lobbied various automakers to basically come to, the, you know, to not only show their wares in Detroit, because they're going to show cars, but basically to unveil new models. See, that's the key. To unveil new models in Detroit. You know, they trademarked the name. They got automaker after automaker. And particularly, I had forgot this, but basically what happened was both Lexus and Infiniti unveiled their new models for the first time in Detroit.
Frank S. Washington, owner and editor with AboutThatCar.com. The North American International Auto Show, known to most as the Detroit Auto Show, continues to serve as a barometer for the entire industry. The 2014 Detroit Auto Show was held at Cobo Hall in the Motor City. The auto show offered the public large, small, practical, and fancy cars from all the major automakers, including what expected to be highlighted this year, the new Ford F-150 and the Chrysler 200. Now in its 25th year as an international event, the Detroit Auto Show is the most prominent auto show in the world, providing unparalleled access to automotive products, people, and ideas that matter most, up close and in one place. The overwhelming theme of this year's show was performance. I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, the North American International Auto Show 2014 with Frank S. Washington with AboutThatCar.com, In Black America.
Well, the average American basically is, they're purchasing family sedans. The best-selling car in the United States is the Toyota Camry, you know. And basically, the Camry is a mid-size sedan. So that's the car that you have, you know, in terms of cars, is a mid-size sedan. The other thing is you're talking about compact, not so much sport utilities anymore, but what they call them, crossover vehicles.
Okay.
Because a traditional sport utility was body on frame. In other words, they put together the frame, the engine, drop all that together on the wheels and all that. Mm-hmm. And it will roll down, and somewhere on that assembly line, the whole frame drops down on top of the vehicle, and then they bolt the frame. They bolt the body, excuse me, to the chassis, and that's called body on frame. What crossovers do is basically crossovers are produced like a car. There is no body on frame. Mm-hmm. You've got a frame there, but basically the body panels are attached directly to the frame. In other words, they call that unibody construction.
Frank S. Washington has covered the automobile industry for more than two decades, first as bureau chief with Newsweek magazine, and now with his own company, AboutThatCar.com. Since 1907, over a century ago, with the exception of the World War II years, Detroit has hosted an auto show. Up until 1989, the show's focus was strictly regional. Today, the North American International Auto Show is where the global automotive community comes together to catch up on the latest news and events. This past winter, the North American International Auto Show, known to many as the Detroit Auto Show, held its 25th event at Cobo Hall in the Motor City. The overwhelming theme this year was performance. More than 5,000 members of the media from 60 countries covered the most respected auto show in the world. Over 30% of the journalists were international, thus helping to spread automotive news made at the show to the world. The show featured large, small, practical, and fancy cars from all the major automakers. In Black America spoke with Frank S. Washington about the industry and this year's auto show.
First of all, the automobile industry used to be what's called a push industry.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, the economy was such that manufacturers could just spew out cars and push them onto the market. because the accounting practices of the day, and I don't think they still have changed, is that basically a manufacturer can book a car as sold as soon as it rolls out the door, whether it's actually sold or not,
mm-hmm.
because they're looking at it as being sold to dealers, not to consumers. So basically what happens is that, and what did happen, was that you had a lot of incentives on cars, you know, $1,000, $2,000, you know, pickup trucks, as much as $4,000 or $5,000was being put on the hood, if you will, to get them, get consumers to purchase these cars. I remember I did a story on this some years ago, you know, prior to 2008. And, you know, one analyst that I talked to said that basically something like 1 million consumers were being drawn for it. That is, 1 million to, you know, 1 million to 1.5 million people were actually buying vehicles, not because they needed the vehicle right then, because they were enticed because of the incentives. You know, it's kind of like when you know, you may not need a sport coat, but if you see one that's on sale for half, all of a sudden, you know, you've got a new sport coat. That's one thing that changed. The other thing that changed is, I think, particularly with the domestic, well, it was the domestic that were really in trouble, more trouble than certainly the Asians and certainly the Europeans. But I think that basically design studios were turned loose. They discovered, meaning the domestic discovered, that you have to produce products that that people like, you know, and that's all about design. You know, it sounds like hype, but car buying is still an emotional experience. You may get a car, you may go shopping for a car that you need, but it's unlikely that you're going to buy a car that doesn't have some sort of emotional response to, unless you're talking about a minivan. That's about the only car that that consumers purchase, although it's not a car. But that's the only vehicle that consumers purchase because they have to have it. You know, and 9 times out of 10, you know, folks don't buy a minivan, not after the first child. They don't buy a minivan until the second child. You know, so that's the second thing that happened. The third thing is, I think, is being, particularly at General Motors, as well as Chrysler. You know, Ford, you know, they brought somebody, and Ford, too, to a lesser degree. But what you have now is new blood running these companies. Ford, you had somebody from outside the industry. Alan Mulally was from Boeing. General Motors has appointed a woman. You know, although she's from GM, from within the company, she brings a different perspective. And then Chrysler is now owned in total by the Italians,
okay.
and that company is run by Sergio Marchionne, who is one of the best in the business. So the companies are basically being run a lot better. And then fourth is that they've been shocked into reality. For the longest, I think domestic manufacturers were operating as though they were still back in the 1940s or not so much the 40s because those were the war years, but the 1950s, the 1960s, and before, maybe the 1930s, where they could pretty much do what they wanted to do. And the downfalls of the market were basically temporary. I think they, you know, sometimes you've got to be scared, and I think they really were scared in the sense that they could go out of business. If not for the government bailouts, they would have went out of business. At least 2 out of 3 of them would have been out of business. And I don't think that's lost on them, you know, in that particular sense. So some of the bad business practices, you know, in terms of mounting debt, they were, you know, because of these bankruptcies, they were able to get rid of debt. Mounting debt, bad products, over-incentivizing the market in terms of pulling people forward. A lot of that has fallen by the wayside, you know, because of these bankruptcies. So I think that in gist is what happened. As I say, it cannot be stressed enough that, one, that, you know, it's you know, you need good designs to sell product, and then that product needs to be sold at a fair price. That's why you haven't seen a lot of price increases. There have been some, but not a lot. I think the quality of American cars is getting better. And what happens is, as Americans get more competitive, it requires that the competition get more competitive too. So in the end, it's the American consumer who benefits.
I understand that GM is declaring its first dividend since 2008?
Yep.
Is that a good sign?
Yeah, it's a good sign, you know, because, you know, it means you got a profit, number one. So it's a very good sign. They are making a lot of hay, you know, in terms of product. But, you know, financially, what it means is, you know, know, it should, how should you say, it should convey some confidence in the financial markets that GM is now profitable. It's paying a dividend. And I won't say it shouldn't be taken as business as usual, but it should be taken that the company is still headed in the right direction.
If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and we're speaking with Frank Washington, owner and editor of AboutThatCar.com. Concluding this week of this particular broadcast, the North American International Auto Show, known to us all as the Detroit Auto Show, how did Detroit get the distinction of being the number one auto show?
It's all about marketing. As a matter of fact, this is the 25th year that the Detroit show has been designated as the North American International Auto Show. And basically, you know, 25 years ago, a group of guys got together. When I say guys, basically, you know, the dealer groups, because that's who sponsors all auto shows, the one in Austin, the one in Amarillo, wherever you have an auto show, nine times out of 10, it's the dealer group that's sponsoring the show. But anyway, as I say, you know, 25 years ago, basically, they got together, and somebody came up with the idea of renaming the Detroit Auto Show the North American International Auto Show, number one. Then number two, what they did was they went around and lobbied various automakers to basically come to, you know, to not only show their wares in Detroit, because they're going to show cars, but basically to unveil new models. See, that's the key, to unveil new models in Detroit. You know, they trademarked the name. They got automaker after automaker, and particularly, you know, I had forgot this, but basically what happened was both Lexus and Infiniti unveiled their new models for the first time in Detroit. See, and that was a big deal. And so, and then what happens too is where you have unveilings, you have the press, and particularly with the Japanese unveiling these two new luxury brands. Then you have a lot of Asian press who came to cover it. Europeans came to cover it. So you have maybe 5,000-6,000 reporters here from literally all over the world. So basically that's how the show got to be number one. Well, and when I say number one, number one is relative, because Chicago probably attracts more people, but it doesn't attract more press. It along with New York, neither one of those shows attract anywhere near the number of reporters that the North American International Auto Show does. And number two, although they both now have some debuts of their own, because, for instance, Lincoln has a new Navigator, and it did not unveil the new Navigator here. I think they're probably going to unveil it in Chicago, because I've seen a little press on it. I've actually seen what it looks like. So you've got some debuts here, but no one... Still, the Detroit show has more world debuts than any of the other auto shows.
You can't have an auto show without awards. I understand the redesigned 2014 Chevrolet Silverado was named North American Truck of the Year. And then GM Chevy Corvette was named North American Car of the Year. How do they go about making those designations and distinctions?
Well, basically, you know, you have a body of judges, you know, in terms of, you know, North American International Car and Truck of the Year. There's a body of auto writers. I forget how many, because actually I was on the first committee, and, you know, I withdrew because, you know, business concerns, I just didn't have time. You know, it's the classic case. If I had known then what I know now, I would have stayed on. I would have stayed on the committee. But, you know, as I said, you have a body, you have a committee of judges basically comprised of auto writers. It might be 20, 25, I forget. Mm-hmm. And basically the first 3 months, maybe 4 months of the year, not the first, but 3 months or 4 months running, leading up to the auto show, they're all test driving cars, you know, and they're test driving these various cars, you know, for and trucks. For the nomination, you know, because basically you end up, you know, I think the process is you may have 20 originally, and then they whittle that down to 3, and then they whittle that down to the best. So, but the thing about it is, and there's an upside and a downside, because when you're doing it that early, you're not, you're not risking being late and so on and so forth, because they announce it at the first press day of the auto show, because I think they announced that Monday maybe last Monday, I'm not sure. But they announced it the first Monday of press week is what they did. But what happens is so, you know, so you've got to have it all done, all wrapped in a nice little package, and so that it can be a press, you know, announced the first day of press week. But, what happens is sometimes you get caught. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're doing stuff, in advance, you know, particularly with the way the news moves today, with the way that things move today,
right.
You know, because you know, I'm sure somebody is wincing someplace that you know, yes, they voted the Silverado, the truck of the year, but you know, before the announcement was made, maybe 3-4 days before the announcement was made, maybe a week before, I'm not sure.
Okay.
The Silverado was recalled. I forget what the problem was. But I mean, they recalled the brand new Silverado, so therefore, you know, for those folks who really pay attention to these things,
mm-hmm.
you know, the award has a little, you know, there's a little egg on their face. You know, I mean, they could not. There's nothing they can do about it. There was nothing they could have done about it. I'll put it like that.
Right.
Because I'm sure if they had their way, I have no doubt they would have said they would have voted something else if they could have changed.
I understand.
But that's how it's done. Basically, a body of judges which consists of automotive journalists who do product reviews and write about the industry all year long.
I am sure you were one of the 6,000 or more journalists that attended the auto show. What caught your eye since you've been doing this for 2-3 decades, 24/7?
Well, you know, it's kind of, well, when you say what caught your eye. For me, I did like let me categorize it like this. Let's talk about stuff that's actually going to go into production.
Okay.
Versus concepts. And from that standpoint, what caught my eye was the Mercedes-Benz CLA. And I've seen a lot of pictures of the car, but that's the first time I ever saw it. So I thought that caught my eye. I thought that was pretty nice. Not the C-Class itself. But this is a CLA, the front-wheel drive, I won't say subcompact, but front-wheel drive compact car that basically comes in under the C-Class. You know, I thought that was pretty cool. I liked the ATS Coupe. That was pretty good. Mini Coopers are always my favorite car,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my, how should you say, in my imaginary garage, I've got 5 slots.
Right.
And one of them's reserved for the Mini. So that was new today. I am not a big truck guy, you know.
Ford introduced a new F-150, didn't they?
Yeah. Now that you say that, that's one reason I think Lincoln mm-hmm. didn't introduce the new Navigator at the show. Because everybody knew the F-150, because the F-150 is the best-selling vehicle in the United States.
Oh.
Has been for years.
Okay.
But anyway, but the big thing about the F-150 is, one, it's all new, but two, it's aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that, you know, they're using aluminum alloy for the, you know, on the sheet metal as well as the frame. You know, and aluminum is a little bit more exotic. There are a lot of questions that remain in terms of, you know, joining the car to the chassis or the sheet metal to the chassis, so on and so forth, how is it going to handle salt, you know, rust and all this kind of stuff. But the bottom line of it is that they took 700 pounds off this truck, which obviously is going to help with fuel economy and a lot of different things. But the question is, how is the maintenance of the truck going to go? But I have a feeling that if that truck is successful, if there are no not so much mechanical problems, structural problems, because that's what we're talking about
mm-hmm.
When we're talking about aluminum and where it's used in that truck. If there are, you know, if there are no structural problems with that truck, I could see other trucks, other vehicles switching to aluminum. You know, because the industry is already moving toward high strength steel. And you know, when you think of high strength steel, when you think of the term high strength steel, you think it weighs more than normal steel, but it doesn't. High-strength steel is actually stronger than normal steel,
mm-hmm.
and it weighs less. Now we're talking about aluminum. I have no doubt that sooner or later, as they get the cost of carbon fiber down, which is stronger than steel, that's as well as aluminum, that sooner or later, you know, you're going to see carbon fiber move into, cars for mass consumption. Right now, carbon fiber is something that's really used in the production of exotic cars. I mean, you're talking like Ferrari, stuff like that.
When you mention aluminum, I understand that the Corvette Z06 and the Corvette Stingray has an aluminum frame?
I think it does. Don't hold me to that. I think it does. I know both have some carbon fiber, you know, in the sense of I think maybe the top is carbon fiber. Maybe the hood, the frame may be aluminum as well. Because, you know, again, it's about weight, strength and weight. You know, how strong is it, you know, but reduce weight because that's one of the ways. Well, you know, when you're talking about reduction in weight, you're talking about better fuel economy. And everything's about fuel economy because, you know, automakers know better than anybody that the cost of fuel is going to go up, you know, because you have it's diminishing returns.
Right.
You know, as the need and the want go up and the reserves go down, the price goes up.
We've been talking for years about the practicality of cars. From your vantage point, the average American, what car would they be looking to purchase?
Well, the average American basically is they're purchasing, what am I thinking? They're purchasing family sedans.
Okay.
Best-selling car in the United States is the Toyota Camry. You know, and basically it's the Camry is a mid-size sedan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the car that you have, you know, in terms of cars, is a mid-size sedan. The other thing is you're talking about compact, not so much sport utilities anymore, but what they call them, crossover vehicles.
Okay.
Because a traditional sport utility was body on frame. In other words, mm-hmm. they put together the frame, the engine, drop all of that together on the wheels and all that,
mm-hmm.
and it will roll down, and somewhere on that assembly line, the whole frame drops down on top of the vehicle, and then they bolt the frame. They bolt the body, excuse me, to the chassis, and that's called body on frame. What crossovers do is basically crossovers are produced like a car. There is no body on frame.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a frame there, but basically the body panels are attached directly to the frame. In other words, they call that unibody construction. So that basically the frame and the sheet metal, which comprises the body, are one piece. You know, that's better for noise, better for vibration. You know, it's not as heavy. Again, we're talking about gas mileage, and so you have a lot of crossovers being produced now. There are the number of sport utilities has dropped. And when I say sport utilities, I'm talking about body-on-frame sport utilities has dropped tremendously over the last, say, 10 years.
When we spoke last year this time, we spoke about energy and the consumption and fuel efficiency. They have EcoSystems now, and they got Flex Fuel. Which is going to be the winner of this?
Well, I think what's happening now is that they've kind of, you know, it's kind of a, and it's not even an argument. What's happening now is that basically I think plug-in hybrids are big.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, what are you doing now? Flex fuel, I really don't see, you know, winning out. And see, that's the other thing. There is no win here.
Okay.
Because, it's, you know, basically what you've got is you've got a lot of different things that can work. For instance, is that if your daily commute, say going to work and coming home and this sort of thing, involves stop and go traffic, then 9 times out of 10, what's best for you is a hybrid. You know, because basically hybrids actually save gas in stop-and-go traffic, regenerative braking, and all this kind of stuff. If your commute involves some long-distance driving, you got to really drive,
mm-hmm.
then maybe it's a diesel, okay? Because diesels save, you know, I mean, diesels get, you know, 45, 46 miles to a gallon of gas,
okay.
or to a gallon of diesel.
You
know,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. The other thing that you're seeing a lot of now is what's called plug-in hybrids. And they can be scaled up or scaled down. Cadillac's got one. I forget the name of the Chevrolet car that's a plug-in hybrid. But basically what it is, it's battery-powered. It's a battery-powered car, but it has a gasoline engine to enhance the mileage that you can get. Because a pure electric car gets something, most of them don't even get 100 miles to a charge. They're around 70 or 80 miles. And they'll tell you that your normal transmute on a daily basis is, you know, somewhere like 50 or 60 miles, and you've got plenty of space. But, you know, it's kind of like leery driving, you know. You know, you're always leery of where your battery power is.
Right.
Well, what they've got now is plug-in hybrids, which means that what you've got is it's an electric car, but there's a small gasoline engine that, enhances its mileage in terms of how far you can get. And next thing, you may be able to get, rather than this 100 or 70 miles or whatever it might be, now maybe you can get 300 or 400 miles, you know, with this small gasoline engine, which works in conjunction with the electric motor. Because, you know, we always say battery powered, but, mm-hmm. you know, those batteries are not most of the time hooked up to one or two electric motors. And then when I say it can be upscaled and downscaled, because I'll put it like this. There's a car out there that's, I think it is a plug-in. No, it's a plug-in hybrid, but it's not a plug-in hybrid. It's a hybrid gasoline combination car.
Mm-hmm.
Thing makes something like 900 horsepower. It's a Ferrari.
Okay.
You know, it's a Ferrari. I think it costs, this is a production car. Well, you know, it's a production car in the sense of, you know, Ferrari doesn't make a whole lot of anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of copies. But I think, look, it's like $1.5 million, something like that. And that's the base price, I might add.
Right.
You know, it's $1.5 million. Ferrari says they're all, because that's what it's called. La Ferrari, I think is what it is. And so, like I said, it's $1.5 million. That's the base price. And Ferrari announced, when they announced this car, they said they were only going to make 499 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The thing was, it was sold out before they even sold the first one.
Gotcha.
But, you know, it's that technology. You will see that sort of technology coming down where, you know, you've got this V12. Yeah, I think it is. It's a V12 that's enhanced by, I think the V12 itself makes 700 horsepower, 750, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got this electric motor, which makes another 200, well, generates another, you know, the equivalent of another 200 horsepower. So it's making over 900 horsepower.
Frank S. Washington, owner and editor with AboutThatCar.com. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at KUT.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm John L. Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.